quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Dean Karnassus. Dean is an American ultramarathon runner who I've been dying to get on the podcast for ages. Some of his crazy achievements include running 350 miles in 80 hours, running a marathon in the South Pole, running a marathon in each of the 50 US states in 50 consecutive days. He's just a crazy running athlete. But what intrigued me so much about Dean when I heard about his story first was he didn't really start running until he was 30. He was in a corporate job and he was doing very, very well in the corporate sector, earning a lot of money, but he felt dead inside. And we got into it in today's episode about how he was in a bar celebrating his 30th birthday or his 31st birthday. And he had this moment where he was like, I can't live my life like this anymore. And he went out and ran 30 miles and he had never ran that distance before. He joked that he thought he had broke some world record because he'd gone so far. But his story is incredible. He's somebody that's been doing it for the last 26 years, 25, 26 years. Dean is at, currently he's 56. And as we were recording this episode, he was going to run a 100-mile race the next day. So he's somebody that's just an embodiment of pushing physical limits to see what you're actually capable of. And although we speak a little bit about running in this, there's a lot on the mindset side of things, on how he lives his life, how he does intermittent fasting, how he eats, how he trains, but a lot on the mindset side. I've even titled this episode Being Comfortable with Being Uncomfortable, which is an incredible message that Dean has for just pushing past limits and seeing where they are. I loved this episode. I loved this interview. I got so much from it myself, even listening back before it's been released when it goes out today. I listened back to it and was like, wow, that's some profound stuff. So I hope you all enjoyed as much as I did. If you're a runner, you're going to love it. If you're into the mindset side of things, you're going to love it. If you are somebody that's stuck in a job and not 100% sure on how to get your ladder against the right wall or where your internal compass is pointing and you're not really sure and you feel a bit lost, you're also going to love it because that's where Dean comes from and it's what set him on this path. So without further ado, an episode that I've been dying to record for a long time now. Today's guest, Dean Karnassus.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm so excited to introduce my guest today, Dean Karnassus. Dean, I know everyone pronounces your name differently, so apologies if an Irish accent has said it. I've heard every pronunciation of it in the ultra-running world. Dean is an American ultramarathon runner, professional speaker, and best-selling author of several books, including Ultramarathon Man, Confessions of an All-Night Runner, and The Road to Sparta, Reliving the Ancient Battle, an epic run that inspired the world's greatest foot race. He's achieved some of the most incredible feats in the sport of ultramarathon running, which include running 350 miles in 80 hours and 44 minutes without sleep in 2005, running a marathon to the South Pole in minus 25 degrees Celsius temperatures without snowshoes in 2002, ran a marathon in each of the 50 US states in 50 consecutive days in 2006, and was the winner of the Badwater Ultramarathon, 135 mile race across Death Valley in 49 degrees temperatures in 2004. Today I'm talking with someone who not only inspired me to complete this year's Marathon de Sabla in the Sahara Desert, but was also my personal catalyst to sign up to run 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle this coming February. Dean, welcome to the show.
I don't know if I can live up to that introduction, but it's great to be here. Thank you for those very kind words.
Mate, I meant every word of them. You've been such an inspiration to me personally, and I'll get on to that as we go along. But can you tell everybody a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm just a runner. A guy who loves to run and has taken his passion to I guess, to new levels in his own life. I've kind of exceeded my expectations of where I thought I could go and have pursued adventure across the globe. So I was a corporate guy up until I was 30. And I was in a pub and a nightclub on my 30th birthday in San Francisco and decided I wanted to change my life, that I didn't like being a business guy. It didn't feel natural to me. So I walked out of the pub at around midnight, very, very drunk, and decided that I would launch my running career that night and run 30 miles. And I did. I say run, but I mean, I more like hobbled and crawled and, you know, just walked and did what I could to cover 30 miles straight through the night, and resigned from my job and said, I'm going to be a runner. And in the couple decades since then, you know, I've done some extraordinary things. I've been a very fortunate person to have seen some incredible places and met some incredible people, yourself being one of them.
Thank you so much. Dean, your story on your 30th birthday, I remember hearing that. Talk everybody through what was going through your mind, because there's a lot of people listening who will resonate with that feeling of there's something not right here, which is clearly where you were at. Talk us through how much running you'd done up to that point, and what was the trigger to go, right, I'm just going to run 30 miles now on after being in a pub for the night?
Yeah, no, that I hope that when I tell this story, that if anyone can relate to it, something that I say is practical to you. But I ran when I was younger. I used to love to run as a kid, and I ran even when I was in high school on the cross country team. And then, you know, then I decided running was boring. You know, there are better things to do than waste my time running. So I, went through college, through university. And I thought, okay, I've got to actually get a good corporate job and make a lot of money. That's how you find happiness. You know, the key to happiness is being rich. It doesn't matter how much you're groveling and how much you hate what you're doing. But I learned early on that money to me, it wasn't the end all. It wasn't bringing me the happiness. You know, I was successful. I was comfortable, and I was miserable. There was no struggle. There was no difficulty. Everything seemed very easy. And for about 2 or 3 years, you know, going into these business meetings with a suit on and, you know, sitting at home at night doing these kind of spreadsheets and so forth and forecasts and, you know, PowerPoint presentations was hideous. It was boring. It just lost its appeal. And I think it just galvanized on my 30th birthday. I was, you know, in a pub, like I said. So, you know, a little bit of liquor always you know, sways your mindset and kind of loosens you up. And, you know, my wife is not a big drinker. My wife is half Irish, by the way. So
nice.
I know how she's a fighter, too. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but, I've read some of the stories.
yeah. And she's she was in dental school at the time. So, you know, she went home early, and I'm in this pub, and all of a sudden this woman that we both knew starts hitting on me. And I could just see, I could see my life in the future. I mean, I could see being 50 years old, being fat, being bald, you know, being miserable, being divorced 3 or 4 times, you know, having an affair with women. And I thought, this is not the life I want. I've got to change course, and I've got to do something dramatic. And I thought, just commit, you know, just go for it. Now's the time to do it. Have another round of tequila, walk out the door and start running. And that's precisely what I did. It was sobering up, and I was sore and somewhat delirious. And I started questioning, what I was doing, as everyone does, because it's scary. You know, here I had a paycheck. I had free health care. I had stock options. You know, I was making a lot of money. And to walk away from all that is terrifying. It's almost as though that security is a prison, though. And I thought, just, you know, do it. You live once, and, you know, in the end, you can't take anything with you. All you can take is your memories and your experiences. So build a life of experiences, and that's what I've done.
Incredible. Because I know getting away from the golden handcuffs is a term that I use regularly. Talk us through where it went from there. So you did your 30 miles, and
Did you sign up to a marathon then? Did you go straight into ultramarathon running? What did the progression look like, say, fast forward the next 18, 24 months?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I ran 30 miles that night, and I'd never heard of anyone running beyond a marathon before. So I thought, wow, you know, you just, maybe that's the furthest anyone has ever run. I was very naive. I thought, you know, the marathon is 26.2 miles. You went further than that. You know, perhaps you set records or something. I wasn't sure. So I just started running casually. I was running, you know, 5 or 6 miles a day. I'm pretty fast, and I was thinking I was, you know, very fit. And then I met two guys that were much, much fitter than me, much faster than me, much stronger than me. And I listened to their story, and they told me they were training for a 50-mile race. And I couldn't get my head around it. I said, what? Hold it. 50 miles? You know, how many days does it take you to run 50 miles? You know, where are the, you know, the campgrounds along the way, or where are the hotels that you stop at? And one of them just said, no, the starting gun goes up. And as soon as that you hear that, you start running and you stop when you cross the finish line. It's a continuous foot race. And it just expanded my notion of human possibility. I thought that is the most insane, crazy thing I've ever heard of. I've got to try it. Sign me up. Where is this race? So I signed up immediately for this 50-mile ultramarathon. And I went to this 50-mile ultramarathon, again, very naive, not knowing what to expect. Of course, I started off way too quick. You know, I went out like it was a 50-yard dash versus a 50-mile race. And, you know, by the end, I was hobbling. I mean, I was, you know, hunched over and just doing everything I could to reach the finish line. But I made it. And in the finishing tent, you know, I'm sitting there nursing my wounds, and I see the two guys that I'd met earlier. And they're high-fiving each other. And I thought, you know, they said, we qualified. And I thought, you qualified for the insane asylum? I mean, what did you qualify for here? And they said, no, we qualified for the Western States 100-mile endurance run. And I said, hold, say that again? And they said, yes, it's called the Western States 100. And I thought, 100 mile? You mean double this? And they said, well, not only is it double this, it's through the mountains. And you cross rivers and... you know, you try to do it in 24 hours. And I said, you know, where do you sleep? And he kind of gave me this funny look. Sleep? What do you mean sleep? There's no sleep. And so I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's impossible. And the guy looked at my time. He said, you know what? You qualified as well. And I thought, okay, if I qualified, I got to sign up for this race. And I signed up for the Western States 100-mile endurance run. And that was kind of the progression. Now, I started getting into ultramarathon. I completed my first 100-miler, so I completed the Western States and started getting more engaged in ultramarathoning and started meeting some of the, you know, the other cast of characters in this sport. And I started meeting some of the really good characters in the sport, some of the, you know, the top ultramarathoners. And, you know, I found out that they were really having a hard time making the go of being an ultramarathoner. And most of them, their careers were fairly short because... You know, you don't have a real long lifespan running, you know, at your prime, especially when you're running 100-mile races. And I thought, well, I really want to make this my career, but how do you do that? I mean, you can't, you know, you win the Western States 100 and you get a belt buckle just like everyone else, which I think is great, but there's no prize money in it. So I thought you've got to figure out a way to actually, you know, feed your family, if you will, to keep the lights on and pay your rent. So I kind of went into this whole thing with the mindset of longevity. Like, you love to run, you love to race, you know, be competitive to the best of your ability, but also, you know, be mindful that if you want to keep doing this, you've also got to have some sort of revenue. It's got to be a real career, if you will. It can't just be this side passion, because then you're going to be trapped in the same place you were before.
What, after the first 100-miler, and there was obviously a time period before you started to make this your full-time career, and you're effectively put ultramarathon running on the map. And I'm very, very confident in my words in saying that. You're the poster child of it at the time, and anybody that's ran an ultra knows your name. Like, it's safe to say.
For better or for worse.
Right? Yeah, it's normally for better. There's I remember reading a quote of yours on Twitter, Dean. I love this quote. And you said, if you want to run, run a mile. If you want to an experience, if you want to experience a different life, run a marathon. If you want to talk to God, run an ultra. And I couldn't agree more. Your mindset has always been something that has fired me up. And I'm very, very curious, when you're doing these sorts of events, particularly the very grueling endurance multi-day or multi-mile or the bad water with the conditions, what's kind of going through your head, or what's your self-talk during these races? Or is there anything at all? Is it different from race to race? Or what does the your inner dialogue look like?
Well, it's an interesting question. And I would tell you it's changed over the years. You know, some of what I do is the same thing that you've experienced, because you've done some of these races and many other listeners have experienced. At a point, you really turn inward. Especially when you're out on your own, say when you're running, well, the Marathon des Sables, you know, it's a pretty popular race. So there might not be a whole lot of stretches while you're on your own, but some of the races I do, I'm out on my own for, you know, 10, 12 hours. I might not see another human, and I really turn inward and I don't think about, you know, the finish line. I never think about the finish line, because when you start doing that, it can get demoralizing, especially when you start, you know, bonking, if you will. You start getting tired, say, at the midway point, and you think, you know, I still have another 50 or 75 or 100 miles to go. And that can really bring you down. So the commitment that I make to myself at that starting line is like, Dean, you're going to be the best Dean that Dean can be today. You're going to give it your all, regardless of how good or how bad you feel. If you're having a great race, you're going to push as hard as you can. If you're having a terrible race, you're going to keep going until you either, you know, fall over on the trail side and they take you out of here in a stretcher, or you reach the finish line. So if you go into it with that commitment, I don't think you can fail, because you're just saying, I'm going to give it my all, and that's the best any human can do. And then, you know, when the pain sets in, I do the exact same thing. I just say, be the best you can be right now. Don't think about the next mile, you know, or kilometer mark. Don't think about anything. Just think about your next step. Take your next step. Take your next step. It's almost somewhat like a Zen-like meditation. I just say to, you know, the internal talk is, take your next step. Take your next step. Take your next step. And just be in the moment, be in the present, of the situation, and try not to have that negative self-talk where I got to drop out. This is not my race. And if you do have that negative self-talk, I always say to myself, never give up at an aid station, because a lot of people are hurting, and you know they know the aid station's 2 miles ahead. And they've already started planning. Wow, you know, I've made it this far, but I'm done. When I get to the aid station, I'm going to announce I'm finished. And they get there and they peel off their race number and they say, you know, I'm DQ'd. And I say, don't ever do that. Get to the aid station. Have some food, first of all. Have something to drink. You know, sit down if you have to. Just spend 5 minutes regrouping. And sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes it's even shorter than that. And then get up and leave the aid station. Never give up at an aid station. And that way, once you're moving, you're forced to either turn around and go back, which you'll never do. Anyone who's doing these sort of races has a fighting attitude. They're never going to turn around and go back. So that forces you to keep going. And that's kind of my strategy for getting through some of these really long, grueling races.
I love it. I had a YouTube clip that you had, and it was nearly those words exactly that you talked about. I think it was the bad water, and you were speaking that you were either going to be leaving in an ambulance on a stretcher, or you were going to get to the finish line. And it was one of those YouTube videos. I just had it on repeat for the entire duration of my long sessions for Marathon des Sables. Any day I would do, you know, a 20 to 40 kilometer run, I just had that video on repeat. It's amazing how it subconsciously programmed my mind.
You're a sick man.
Dean, during the years of, say, 2002, so the South Pole Marathon, for example, to say 2006, so running 50 US states in 50 consecutive days, What did your training look like during this time? What did your typical week look like?
Well, leading up to some of these races, my training block can be 6 months, and a lot of it has actual races involved. So if you look up to, if you look to the 50 marathon Endeavor, I had probably a half dozen races in the 6 months prior, maybe even more than that. I think it was more like 8 races that were either 50 miles or greater. So I was training by running, I would say between 100 to sometimes 200 miles a week, but that's somewhat misleading because 100 miles of that 200 might be a 100-mile race. So I do a lot of racing and then recovering and then kind of tapering to the next race. And I find that incorporating racing into my training, so doing these kind of long races, a 50 or 100-mile race as a training run, really helps. And even marathons, like I hop into a lot of just regular, traditional road marathons as training runs. And I find that, if I go out and do a 26.2-mile training run on my own, I may push pretty hard, even if I'm, really trying to, stay on plan and such. But if I'm in race conditions, I inevitably push harder. So I encourage people to sign up for races as training runs.
Yeah, it's a really, really good idea. What about your nutrition then? I know it hasn't changed that much over the years, but how did your nutrition look like during those periods of time?
Well, I have to digress and say, people can change, and my nutrition has definitely changed. So, I famously ordered a pizza one time.
Please tell me the story. This is one of my favorite stories of yours.
Well, I never thought it would be something it even resonated with folks, but I was doing I signed up for this 200-mile, 12-person relay race, but I don't have 11 friends, so I signed up to do it solo, and I was out in the middle of nowhere, at 10 o'clock at night running by myself, and there was nowhere to get food, and I was completely out of food, but I had a credit card and a cell phone, so I just thought, order a pizza. You're on a road. there's a pizza place not far, 20 miles from here. They'll bring you a pizza. So I ordered a pizza and had it delivered and just rolled it up into a big, Italian burrito style and just ate it as I ran. And it was really good. But, I wrote about that in my first book, and that story is stuck. Everyone loves that story, and I see why. Pizza is just very, very good. When you're running.
And I can imagine the guy that delivered it.
Yeah, he was out of his... He couldn't believe it. He said, I've never delivered to a runner before. I thought, I'm not surprised by that. But as far as my nutrition now, I don't eat a lot of pizza anymore. I mean, I have pizza... Inevitably, if I do some of these long runs, someone just as a joke will order a pizza and I'll come around a corner and there'll be a pizza guy standing there. But I don't do it on my own anymore. I've changed my diet to eat almost more natural foods. So, you probably know of the paleo diet. I've been following a paleo diet now for about the past 10 years. And most of my on-course nutrition subsists of nut butter. So I'm a big fan of cashew nut butter and hazelnut butter. I like... a product called Ultima Replenisher, which is an electrolyte replenishment beverage that has no sugar, so it's just electrolytes. So I'm really watching my sugar intake and trying to run kind of in a keto-adapted state, so relying more on fat as fuel. And I think that inevitably that helps with endurance. I think it slows you down a lot. My legs often feel heavy at shorter races. But I think in the longer distances, you definitely have sustained energy for these really, really long runs.
When did you make that transition from, say, glucose glycogen-based to more fat-adapted keto? When did you make that transition over?
Well, I would say about 10 years ago, I started noticing, these pasta feeds before a marathon are leaving me bloated the next day. I'm thinking carbo load. And you'll have a lot of energy. And I was showing up at the race start the next morning feeling like I still have a lot of pasta in my gut, kind of feeling bloated and uncomfortable. So I thought, I wonder if you just cut out pasta, if you cut out bread, if you cut out all grains, how you'd feel. And I felt remarkable. So I thought, what about anything in a bag? You know, no potato chips, nothing, you know, nothing that kind of is processed or man-made. If you eliminate those foods, how would you feel? So it's kind of through self-selection, about a decade ago, I thought I've kind of ended up with a paleo diet. And just by naturally eliminating those foods that left me kind of feeling listless and adding more foods that gave me energy. And that's been going on for about 10 years.
And what about your protein intake then? You obviously have a lot of fats with the different nut butters. Do you consume a lot of protein, or do you keep that quite moderate as well?
I do consume quite a bit of protein, and I'm not a vegan, so I do eat meat. I primarily eat cold water seafood. And when I say cold water, I mean mackerel, sardines, and, you know, living in San Francisco, I love wild Pacific salmon, so a lot of salmon. And cold water fish has a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. And so I get a lot of my fats through cold water fish, and a lot of it's very high quality protein as well.
Yeah, it's a great amino acid profile. You're in a great spot in San Francisco there as well. I lived there for a period of time. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. It's incredible.
It's not a bad place to call home, yeah.
It really isn't. Talk to me. Something that I haven't seen, Dean, that I'm dying to, it's on my list, is the Road to Sparta documentary. Can you tell everybody a little bit more about that, the lead up to it, the process? Just kind of talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so for those of you listening that don't know of this race called the Spartathlon, it is a 153-mile foot race from Athens to Sparta. So it basically is a recreation of the original marathon that Pheidippides, the Greek runner, ran 2,500 years ago. And if you've ever seen the movie 300, you know about the Spartans. This is Sparta. So the Spartans were kind of the most badass fighting force in ancient Greece. And when the Persians invaded Greece, they sent this foot messenger from Athens to run all the way to Sparta to recruit the Spartans to help defend against the invading Persians. So this race takes place in September, and it's very, very hot in Greece, southern Greece, in September. And it has a very aggressive cutoff time. For instance, you have to be to Corinth, which is about 50 miles. You've got to be there within 9.5 hours or you get cut from the race. And it's a pretty hot and hilly 50 miles you've got to cover. And then from that point, you still have 103 miles to cover within a total time of 36 hours. So that's what the race is all about. I wanted to try to recreate the race. I'm 100% Greek, and I was trying to retell the story of Pheidippides. And I thought, you know, you can't recreate the trail he ran on because a lot of it is pavement now, but you can try to replicate the foods that he ate to try to put yourself in his mindset to better tell this story. So during the race, I only relied on figs and olives and cured meat, so like a beef jerky, and something called pastelli, which is ground sesame seed and honey. That was kind of an energy paste the ancient runners used to use. And I only drank water. I didn't drink any sort of electrolyte replenishment beverage. And that's what I ran the entire course on. And how did things go? Well, it wasn't my best race. Far and away. I trained a lot with eating figs. But, you know, eating figs for 8 to 10 hours is one thing. Eating figs continuously for 24 hours, it created a lot of GI issues, as you can imagine. So it wasn't my best race, but I don't want to be a spoiler, but I'll tell you, I somehow got to the finish line. And that's the story of the Road to Sparta.
I love it. It's I can only imagine what the figs would do to your digestive system over that period of time, because they tend to keep things moving as it is. Talk to me, Dean. Was that, or if it wasn't, what was the most difficult race? Because there's countless that I look at and go, that was the hardest. No, that was probably the hardest. What one did you find of all the ones that you've done up to this point, and it may have been Road to Sparta, the Sparta race, what was the most difficult one? Which one did you find the hardest?
You know, I think the race, the Spartathlon, so the Road to Sparta, was probably the most difficult in that it's hard to describe kind of my personality in Greece, but I'm somewhat of a known quantity because I'm Greek and, you know, the Greeks...
You're a celebrity in Greece. Like, that's a safe... It's safe to say that. If you won't say it, I'll say it. It's safe to say that.
And, you know, being a celebrity, people have... I don't know if they have expectations, but, you know, they're expecting to see this guy that they've read about and they've seen pictures in the magazine. You know, he's fit, he's hulking, he's smiling, you know, he's charging. And when you're not doing that, I mean, I was doing just the opposite. You know, you've been in a race before, you've been hurting and you're suffering and you're just not at your best. So, you know, every time I'd come around a corner, there'd be cheering fans standing there, you know, wanting me to sign things. I mean, I'd come into aid stations where I was just ready to, you know, start puking, and there's 20 people there wanting, you know, saying they're my relatives and they want me to sign posters. You know, they brought their cousins, and, you know, I've got all these relatives I've never met in my life, all speaking Greek to me, surrounding me, and, you know, and I'm feeling like I've got diarrhea. You know, I've got cotton mouth, I'm drooling on myself, but still I've got to rise to the occasion and try to, you know, present myself. I mean, these people don't want to see Dean Karnazes that's, you know, just dead on the roadside, which I really was. And so it created a lot of issues beyond just the running. You know, the running itself was challenging enough, but, you know, to kind of put on this front and to be polite and approachable to, you know, these hundreds of people that were showing up to meet me along the way, that added a new challenge that made things really difficult. And it's, I know a lot of people listening to this cannot relate to what I'm saying, but, you know, I mean, try to put yourself in my shoes. It's just, it's not the most pleasant thing. I mean, you know, I always tell my wife, for any woman that's had a child, you can relate to this. I mean, imagine being in labor, you know, and having 20 people walk in you've never met before asking to take, you know, selfies with you. That's what it felt like. I was in that much pain.
I can imagine. To flip the script on that a small bit, what race then comes to mind when I say what was the one that gave you the most feeling of achievement at the finish line? Was it that one as well, or was it possibly another one earlier on?
You know, I would say one race I'm very proud of is the Atacama Crossing. And that's one of the four desert races. It's very similar, and it's exactly the same as the Marathon des Sables in format, only it's in the Atacama Desert in Central America or South America. And Atacama is the driest place on Earth. So it's, you know, the place we were running in for this 6-day, you know, multi-stage 250-kilometer run, they'd never recorded rain. You know, and I asked the guys, you know, since when? And he said, ever. it's never rained here. And I thought, man, this is not a great place to race. So it was bone dry, no humidity. It was getting up near 100 degrees during the day and then below freezing at night. And as you know, you sleep on the ground. And, you know, in the Sahara, there's sand. You can find some place that's kind of acceptable to put down your sleeping bag at night. But in Atacama, it was rocks. So we were sleeping, you know the format. You're in a tent with strangers and you're sleeping on rocks. And you're not showering, you know, you're eating dehydrated food or freeze-dried food, and you're carrying everything you need for 6 days on your back. So reaching the finish line of that race, that was my first kind of formal multi-stage race, and I think that was very gratifying.
Yeah, I remember my feeling crossing the finish line. It's like a difference. It's very, very hard to put into words. We're going to take a little bit of a different direction, Dean. Talk to me about wine and your love for Greek wine.
Oh, yeah. So I, you know, I've been a wine drinker most of my adult life. And, you know, I used to drink my share of beer, but I, you know, now beer kind of gets to my guts. I don't like beer so much anymore. And good, you know, good wine is hard to come by. Good, really clean wine that doesn't have a lot of sulfites or histamines, you know, or any sort of additives. And I met a guy, a Greek guy, that was importing wine from Greece. And it was really good wine. And it was helping the Greek farmers. You know, he's bringing these grapes over from Greece, and it was helping the Greek economy. And I loved the wine, but his label, I wasn't crazy about his label. It was a very thick and formal kind of label. And I thought, this guy's Greek. You know, what the Greek consumer wants and what the American consumer wants are two different things. Let's position it for athletes. I mean, this is great for recovery. It's great for sleep. And let's call this wine Marathon. So he agreed to that. We came up with a label. And I couldn't believe no one had the name Marathon Wines. But we launched Marathon Wines. And that was kind of the genesis of the company. And it's kind of marketed to people that run. And I'm not talking about, you know, ultra marathoners, people running 100 miles. There are a lot of people that run these, they're called wine country half marathons. And you, having lived in San Francisco, you know where the wine country is.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's one that's called the Napa to Sonoma Wine Country Half Marathon. And you basically spend a weekend drinking wine and running. And it's really a lot of fun. And that's kind of the consumer we're going after.
It's a great, I'm a wine drinker. So as soon as I, again, came across the Marathon wine, I'm like, oh, I like the sound of that. You don't ship that all over though, Dean. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the laws with shipping alcohol are pretty restrictive. So we can't import it to other countries now. You got to come back.
Yeah, 100%. It's on my list. I think
we'll
nothing better.
We'll have a bottle chilled for us.
I love it. Okay, Dean, I want to keep with this slight direction change. So I'm going to throw a couple of questions at you, a couple of rapid fires. You can answer them kind of short. You can expand on them, kind of go in whatever direction you want with them. When you think of the word successful, who's the first person besides a family member that comes to mind and why?
Besides a family member. Well, you know, I always look for real life examples. I met with a guy yesterday who happens to be a neighbor of mine, and he's a young bloke. He's probably around 40 years old, and he had retired. He worked for Facebook, and he was working 80-hour weeks, and he was rich, and he said, why am I working? I'm going to dedicate myself now for the rest of my life giving away all my money. I'm going to be a philanthropist. And I just, you know, he's like, I'm a runner. I wanted to meet you. I'm going to meet people I like to meet. He asked, do you have any causes you believe in? I'm giving away everything I own. I thought, that's amazing. Most of us are looking at accumulating as much stuff as we can. And here this 40-year-old kid just said, I'm calling him a kid. You know, 40-year-old isn't really a kid, but a 40-year-old guy just said, okay, I made a lot of it. Now I'm going to give it all back. And I just thought, wow, that's kind of a successful gentleman.
That kind of, I'm going to stay on that point just for a minute, because one of the things, as I said earlier, that resonated so much with me, and I know a lot of people will be in a similar boat. You were similar in the sense that you had a corporate job and were doing very, very well. So, and I'm again, forgive me if I'm misquoting this to a different family member, but when you left, and I speak regularly about the average of the five people you spend the most time with, that your inner circle is crucial. Your wife in particular was supportive of you leaving your corporate job. Am I right in saying that you had a good support network around you when you tried to make that change?
You're exactly right. And I think my wife said it best when I came to her and I said, you know, I'm going to leave my job. And she looked at me and she just said, I wonder why it took you so long. So incredibly supportive woman.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, again, the people that are in your inner circle, because that could have gone another way. And there's you know, people that have spouses that may not have been as supportive, particularly when you were climbing that mountain and you were doing very well in the corporate world. I love that. And it's something I wanted to just give to listeners, that the people you spend time with in your inner circle are so important. Next one. What?
Well, I think, you know, you've seen and I've seen. Yeah, I mean, we've both seen that, and, you know, endurance sports are very polarizing. I mean, when one partner gets into, you know, either ultra marathoning or even marathoning or, you know, triathlons, it's gonna either bring a relationship much closer together and people are going to grow tighter because of it, or it's just going to destroy a relationship. And I've seen relationships destroyed when one partner got into it, and I've seen other relationships grow much, much closer.
Does your wife run?
If she's being chased by wild animals, she runs very fast. But other than that...
which is even more amazing because, again, she has to connect it on a deeper level because she doesn't do it herself. More testament to her. Again, behind every great man is a great woman.
Yeah, I would say behind every great man is a very surprised woman.
Well, definitely with some of the things you've done, Dean, I can imagine her face when you're like, "Yeah, I'm going to run 350 miles in 80 hours." Next question: what purchase of $100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 18 months or 24 months?
Well, I just I was unexpectedly given an opportunity to give a keynote presentation to a corporation in Florida, and this was 2 days ago. And so I hopped on. I said, "I got to do this." You know, I love giving keynotes because it's an opportunity to influence others to be more healthy, to be, you know, to be more proactive in managing their health. So I took a red eye, flew to Florida, gave this presentation. I was getting on a red eye coming home, and I'm running a 100-mile race. Tomorrow Saturday. So I'm running a 100-miler tomorrow, and I thought, "You're going to be destroyed because you just took back-to-back red eyes, you know, 48 hours with no sleep, plus kind of jet lag." And so I upgraded to business class for $100. And that was the best $100 I think I've spent recently. So I got to actually lay down and sleep for a bit.
That's a great investment of $100. What do you like as a sleeper generally, Dean?
You know, it's a work in progress. Let's put it that way. I've never been a good sleeper, and I typically sleep 4 to 5 hours a night. I know I should be sleeping more, but I get restless, and so I'm trying to calm my mind to sleep better. I know my quality of sleep is very good. It's just my quantity is not so good. So I'm working on trying to sleep at least 6 or 7 hours a night, but typically it's around 5.
But you feel quite physically recovered, obviously, even on the 5 hours that you're getting.
I do. And, you know, maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm running on, you know, half a battery, and I don't know the difference. But I feel like I'm fine on, you know, on 5 hours of sleep.
Yeah, there's again, some people just have different polymorphisms in their genes that allow them to function on that level. You're obviously one of those people, because on 5 hours, I'm barely fit to get out of bed. Don't mind run 100 miles.
Well, my dad only sleeps about 5 hours a night, and, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe it's something genetic.
Yeah, it sounds it. Do you have a favorite running shoe?
Well, I've got to disclose that I'm sponsored by the North Face.
Yeah.
So I run in their trail running shoes, and I'll give the North Face credit. They've come a long way. Their shoes are not for everyone. But in the last, you know, 10 years, their shoes have really improved. So I now am pretty happy to promote the North Face running shoes. I have to be honest, you know, I was a bit conflicted initially because the shoes were not so great. And I didn't want to, you know, I said, you know, I'm sponsored by the North Face, but I encourage you to try, you know, maybe try some other brands. But now I don't have a problem, promoting the North Face for trail running. As far as road running, I like Ultras, which you may know. Ultras, it's a U.S. brand, and the forefoot is really, really wide. So I've got a kind of a fat forefoot, and the last of that shoe seems to fit my foot really well.
How is your feet with blisters on longer distance runs? Do you have an issue with them, or are you one of these people that just doesn't really bother?
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with blisters. And if you do, I can't imagine how you survive Marathon des Sables, because if you get blisters, MDS is a nightmare.
They were destroyed, Dean. I lost like a whole layer of skin on underneath of my foot. I was using crutches on the walking poles. Like when we got back to the hotel, just my legs were fine, but my feet, I'd like all the skin was gone from blisters. So yeah, it wasn't great. Imagine. Do you have a favorite TV show or Netflix series?
You know, I don't watch much TV, I have to be honest. You know, when I do watch TV, there's a show, and this I don't know if you get it in Ireland, but it's this crazy show. It's called Naked and Afraid.
I haven't seen it.
It's the wildest show. So it basically takes two strangers that voluntarily agree to this. Two complete strangers, a man and a woman. And it dumps them in some remote area, you know, usually a jungle or a desert. And they meet each other. They take off all their clothes, and they have to spend 21 days surviving on their own. I mean, and there's a film crew that follows them, obviously.
Yeah.
And I still can't get my head around. I could never do that. I don't know if I'm too self-conscious or whatever, but it's a complete stranger. So you don't know their personality. And not only that, you know, you're taking off all your clothes in front of them, and you know, you're living together in very close quarters. I mean, you build primitive huts that you sleep under for 21 days. That's the goal.
Hold on now for a second. If I'm not mistaken, you were voted the sexiest man in sport. So if anybody does not need to be self-conscious about it, tell everyone about that. I've forgotten who awarded that. Talk us through that. It was the sexiest man in sport or sexiest man in running. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it was Women's Sports Illustrated.
That was it. That's it.
Yeah, I still like, I don't know how I got that vote, but very embarrassing. Very embarrassing.
Brilliant. Yeah, so I think for that show you'd be perfectly fine. What do you do for downtime then, Dean? How do you kind of unwind? Obviously glasses of wine, but do you have any other routines or strategies that you do to kind of just unwind?
Relaxing makes me very stressed. And I mean, I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I don't have a good time relaxing. I just can't do it. So there's really no, I mean, I love my job so much, and I'm very bad at saying no. And I always take on more than, you know, I bite off more than I can chew, but I love it. So, you know, when I have downtime, I've got three or four blogs I maintain. I've got all kinds of things that I'm doing. And I prefer to occupy my time with those sort of activities. Do I meditate? I don't. I've tried meditation, and I just can't get my head there. When I meditate is when I run. Probably like a lot of people listening to this, you find that running is meditation. That's my form of meditation. So a lot of times I just go out on long runs for 2 or 3 hours with completely unplugged. So no, Strava turned off. No tracking device, nothing in my ears. I just run. And to me, that's therapy.
Yeah, I think it's the best. There's been several times that come to mind that I can think that I had a problem, and I've gone for a 1-2 hour run, and the problem has nearly solved itself by the time you get back. It's incredible for meditative states or working out any problems. What does your first 60 to 90 minutes of your day look like then? Do you get up and run in the mornings? Do you have any morning routine? What does take us through what your first kind of 60 to 90 minutes of your day looks like?
Well, I will, and I will tell you that I have an allergy to routine. So I can't do the same thing every day or I go nuts. Sometimes I run in the morning, sometimes I run midday, and sometimes I run in the evening. And I encourage others to do that, especially if you're an ultra marathoner, because a lot of people just, you know, have their routine. They get up and they run only in the morning. But if you're running an ultra marathon, you know, you're going to be running in the afternoon and in the evening and even straight through the night if you're running a longer race. So I encourage you to train by doing these things. As far as what my, you know, the first thing out of bed is I drink coffee. I love coffee. I love a very light, almost a blonde roast, so very, very light roast. And with my coffee, I actually grind rosemary. So I grind up rosemary with in the coffee grounds, and it really transforms the flavor of the coffee. other than that, a cup of coffee, I put sometimes a little stevia in it for sweetness, but no sugar, no fat, no source of fat, just plain coffee. And other than that, if I don't go for a run, I write in the morning. I find that my mind is clearest early in the morning, so I'll do some of my writing early on.
Do you do your writing? You obviously do it fasted then. You don't have any food in the morning for the first period of the day. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, you're right. And most days I do somewhat of a, intermittent fasting or modified fast. And I usually don't, sometimes I won't eat until dinner to really keep myself in a fasted state. And I'll go for a run in a fasted state. Other times I'll have, something in the morning around 9, 10 a.m. And when I say something, it's typically some Greek style yogurt, which is 100%, it's 100% fat. So it's not, there's nothing diluted from it. There's no sugar added. It's just plain Greek yogurt. It's very tart. And with that, I'll have some nuts or some nut butter and maybe a sliced banana or some organic berries, but very low on carbohydrates.
And do you, depending on the day you intermittent fast or the days you actually have meal, do you listen to your body or do you do it based around your training session that day? How do you decide, or do you just wake up in the morning and just go by instinct?
I typically go by instinct, but I also try to override my body. So if I'm really, really hungry, I try not to eat. So I try to command my body with my mind. Because when you run ultra marathons, your body, the inclination is to stop, right? When you're in a lot of pain, what your body's telling you is stop. And you need to override that impulse and keep going. So you need to be comfortable in an uncomfortable state. And when I feel really hungry and ravished, I don't let myself eat, just so that I can command my body with my mind. And that's purposefully why I do it.
I love that. That makes so much sense because it's, you, as you said, I love that being comfortable, being uncomfortable. Like that's
it makes sense to us, but most people would say that's ridiculous. If I'm hungry, I'm going to stuff something in my mouth. But, of course, you agree with me entirely. Don't do it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. As soon as you said that, I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But I suppose that's why we do what we do. And a lot of people listening will resonate on some level with that. Maybe not in the the same way as I have. I love it, though. Tell me, do you have a quote that you live by or refer to often? It may be one of your own or maybe one from somebody else that motivates you. Do you have a favorite quote?
My dad used to tell me that it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. It matters how many times you get back up. So that, I think, resonates on so many levels with so many people, myself as well, that's one of my favorites.
I love it. There's numerous amounts of your quotes that I love. The, if you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. I remember, as I said, that video that I would listen to on repeat, those words, and I'm leaving here on a stretcher or in an ambulance, or I'm getting to the finish line. Again, it just, things like that, and that whole thought process that I regularly say on the podcast is how you do anything is how you do everything. And what I love about your message and what I love about so many of the value that you've shared is it can apply to any area of life, like putting one foot in front of the other and getting back up when you've been knocked down. That goes for ultramarathons, but that goes for relationships, that goes for business, that goes for any area of your life. I think it's why people connect so much with it. And I love that quote that your dad has obviously instilled in you. It's very hardwired, you can tell.
Well, and I think, to reinforce what you said, the lessons we learn from running and ultramarathoning apply to every element of your life. And that's why I'm such an advocate of this sport. I've seen how it's transformed people. your relationships improve, your community involved, everything you do improves because of the experience of running a marathon or an ultra marathon.
If you were to give any advice to people that were looking to go from, that have ran a marathon, for example, because there's a lot of people listening here whose end goal is a marathon or working up to a half marathon, what advice, either mindset or physically, would you offer to someone that's like, okay, Dean, I've done a marathon or I'm working to do a marathon this year, but I'm thinking of running an ultra. What advice would you offer them?
my advice is pretty simple. Sign up. Literally, go online and hit that button that says register. And that's it. Yeah, I mean, that's a simple advice. And once you've hit that button, everything changes.
Being committed, making a decision. It comes back to what you said about having a commitment. And just when you've made the decision, it's amazing how everything transforms around you to help you hit that goal.
Yeah, I mean, you come home from work and, you know, you want to kick back on the couch, have a beer and eat some pizza, but you know you've got a race coming up and it motivates you. It changes everything. So just hit register and it'll take care of itself from there.
I love it. And to finish on the last question before we tell everybody the best place to find out more about you, you've obviously achieved so much, some of the wisdom. And for those of you who've listened to this podcast, I implore you to go follow Dean on all of his platforms, read his books. I'll be linking them all up in the show notes because he's just one of the most inspiring people. And I'm very curious, if you could go back to the 18-year-old Dean and you could offer him any piece of advice, what would you say to him?
I would say to buy Apple at $6. That would have changed everything.
Second piece of advice you'd offer him.
The second piece of advice is maybe learn early to have more fun and not take yourself so seriously or take life too seriously. That we're all so much of what we do seems so important to us, and you know, in the grand scheme of things, enjoy what you got while we have it, because it doesn't last long and you never get it back and it's kind of one and done. So I would say, you know, learn to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think even the way your life transformed from 30 years on, I think, again, living testament to it, that when you're ready to make the change, just make the change and everything will open up around it. Dean, I can't thank you enough. And I have a separate introduction to this podcast and people know how big of a fan I am of yours, your mindset, all the value you've provided me. And as I said, I implore everybody to go follow you across everything. Can you tell everybody listening the best place to find out more information about you, your books, documentary, speaking, wine, etc.? Where's the best place for people to find out more about you?
You know, just type in my name in Google. some people want to follow me on Facebook maybe or Twitter, or they want to go to my website or learn about my books. But I think that depending on, you know, if there is something that I said that resonates with you, you know, just go on Google and type in my name and that keyword and, junk will come up and you can track me that way.
And for those of you listening, I will be linking everything up in the show notes. Go get Dean's books. I'll be linking up his Instagrams, his Facebook, his website. For anyone listening that wants to get him as a keynote speaker, anything along those lines, I'll have all those links on the website on briankeenfitness.com. Dean, thank you so much.
Brian, it was a delight. Thank you for having me on your show. And good luck to you and good luck to all your listeners.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting actually on medical clearance. Ugh, yikes. So stay tuned for that, and remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.